Hello and welcome to the podcast. This is Ron's Amazing Stories. We have stories that should thrill you a little and chill you a little.
It's amazing.
You will hear adventures sent in by you guys, classic stories from the pulp mags, and episodes from the golden age of radio. We have special segments like Ghost Stories with Sylvia.
That's amazing.
And the paranormal with Jason.
I think we're going to have a lot of fun.
So settle in for the next hour and enjoy the show. Oh, and you just might want to prepare yourself to be taken away from today.
Another 5 minute mystery.
This 5 minute mystery is being brought to you by unbearably loud noises. You know, the ones that make your ears bleed and then run for the hills. Too much sound makes it hard to hear what is happening around you. Now, here is our story.
Homicide Bureau, Sergeant Timmons speaking.
Sergeant. Ken Forbes of a Lawson Forbes Machinery Company.
Yes?
You better send one of your men out here to our factory right away.
Accident?
Yeah, worse than that. It's about a young ex-convict we have working here. He just murdered Mr. Lawson.
Hello? Are you Mr. Forbes?
What?
I say, are you the Mr. Forbes that called police?
Oh, I'm sorry.
Oh, yes, I'm Forbes. It's an extremely rush order I'm working on. I couldn't afford to let it wait.
I understand, yes.
If you'll just follow me, Inspector. Uh-huh. Mr. Lawson's in his office over here, officer. Just like I found him after Joseph shot him. There's the body.
Shot through the head, hmm?
This the gun? Yes, Lawson's own gun.
A pretty small gun for a man to have. Usually you only find these in a woman's purse. Didn't you say this Joseph was an ex-convict, Mr. Forbes?
That's right, officer. I warned Lawson about hiring someone with a police record, but he ignored me.
Why? Well, where is this Joseph? Did he get away?
I have him locked in the washroom here, so he couldn't run away. Now, come on out.
Well, haven't you anything to say, Joseph?
What's the use? What good would it do me to say I didn't do it? Who'd believe me, an ex-con?
Why'd you do it?
I didn't do it. I was working on the milling machine, and Mr. Forbes knows it.
Officer, I heard Lawson giving Joseph the devil just before this happened. I'd been in the office.
That's a lie.
It's not a lie. You had been snooping. I saw you going through the checking accounts 2 days ago.
Mr. Lawson asked me to help him audit the accounts.
That's a poor alibi. Ask you. Why wouldn't he have his own partner help him on the audit? You were just snooping. He probably caught you this afternoon, and you knowing where Lawson kept his gun, got it and shot him.
Forbes, what were you doing all the time the squabble was going on?
I was operating that chain of automatic punch presses over there in the corner. As I told you when you came in, it's a rush order.
And how did you know about this?
Well, I heard Lawson giving Joseph here a good lacing. Joseph seemed pretty sullen. Then all of a sudden, I heard a shot. I ran into the office and found Lawson slumped back in his chair, blood running from his temples.
I didn't do it, officer. Just because I was set up once for some childish prank, you can't accuse me of murder.
I'm not accusing you, Joseph. But I am arresting Mr. Forbes for the murder of his partner.
What clue did the officer uncover that turned the finger of guilt on Mr. Forbes? We'll find out in one moment. But first...
Wow, I think I can actually find this one.
What was that? I can't hear what you said.
Oh, here, let me shut off my machine press.
I said I think I can actually solve this one. How in the heck did the partner hear what they were talking about over the sound of that milling machine? Hey, it's just a thought, and you can't be sure. But what do you say we go find out?
And now, back to the homicide officer and the solution.
Forbes, you said you were operating those punch presses when you heard Lawson arguing with Joseph. Then you heard the shot.
I did.
This gun being so small makes very little noise, yet you say you heard it over there in the corner with all those punch presses going. Forbes, you couldn't have heard a shot because just a few minutes ago, you couldn't hear me for all the noise. And I was shouting right into your ears. No, Forbes, your ears aren't that good and neither is your alibi.
See, I was right. And our murderer is a complete idiot to think he could get away with a lame alibi like that one. They say noise has one advantage. It drowns out words. This 5-Minute Mystery was brought to you by Unbearably Loud Noises. They really aren't good alibis.
What's that you say?
Welcome to the podcast this week. If you've been following the news, you may know that we've had a block of not-so-fun events here in my neck of the woods. In fact, we've had damaging winds, forest fires, and currently have the worst air quality in the world.
In the entire world? That can't be right.
I'm afraid it is. My sister even had to be evacuated from her home, but was able to return after a few days. However, the smoke in the air will still be with us for a bit, and I have to say it's left my throat more than just a little sore. With that said, on the program today, I borrowed some of your stories from episode number 370 so that I wouldn't have to record as much. Also, we have a classic story from the shadow about a fake ghost and some very real murders. So, what do you say we get to it with this message from Audible? Today's podcast is brought to you by Audible. Get a free audiobook and a 30-day free trial at audibletrial.com/Ron's Amazing Stories. They have over 180,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, computer, Kindle. Whatever you have, you can listen to Audible on it. So what am I listening to right now? Heist with Michael Caine, written and narrated by Sir Michael Caine. Caine was probably best known as gang leader Charlie Croker in the 1960s crime caper The Italian Job. In this audiobook, Michael tells stories of remarkable heists and extraordinary robberies from around the world. Now here's an introduction to the book by Michael himself.
For more than 60 years now, I've loved playing thieves, criminals, gangsters, and sometimes even the detectives trying to catch them. But there's Hollywood movies and TV, and then there's real life. And in a way, that's when it gets even more interesting.
He was a folk hero. He was a thug. Thought he was immune to law enforcement.
Because heists are actually human stories.
They were scared. I saw people crying.
With real loot.
Emeralds, sapphires, rubies, an entire galaxy of precious stones.
Real masterminds.
So I'm watching this guy pull all this money out, and I said, man, that's what we got to do. We got to get that big money like this. You know what I'm saying?
Real victims.
What if they left something in the building that could explode? This is not just a bad movie. This is for real.
And real consequences.
It was almost as if I'd been attacked in my own home.
I'm going to tell you the stories of some of the most remarkable heists.
They were able to get that money out of the country. To this day, I still shake my head that that happened.
And history's most extraordinary robberies.
You cannot get in there. It's even harder than the Federal Reserve.
How they came about, what went down.
There were no suspects. No witnesses.
And what happened after?
It was a perfect burglary.
I'm Michael Caine, and for Audible Originals, this is Heist. And in this episode, the inside story of one of the biggest diamond robberies in history. It's the 2003 Antwerp Diamond Heist. One Monday morning, Detective Patrick Pez was early into the office as usual when his phone started to ring.
Around 7:30, 7:45, I received a phone call from the local police, the emergency station of the local police, that says, okay, there is a burglary in a safe, in a vault. It didn't seem too dramatic, but okay. Being the federal police squad, it was our task to go there, so...
But when he arrived on the scene...
It became immediately clear that there was something more going on than just the break-in in some kind of a vault. A lot of people were gathering in the street, and we saw immediately that people were even panicking, were almost hysteric, some of them.
Patrick heads straight past the people on the street, into the building, and down to floor minus two.
And there were we confronted with was something quite unimaginable. In our career, we were never confronted with such a sight. We were witnessing something that nobody ever could have expected or experienced.
Because the break-in they had just found was a robbery at one of the most impregnable vaults in the world, in one of the most secure locations, within one of the most secure cities in the world. $100 million worth of loot. And what have the thieves stolen?
They're completely untraceable, and they retain their value anywhere on the globe. They can be easily liquidated, and they're very, very portable.
Ladies and gentlemen, or maybe I should say boys and girls.
As they say, diamonds are a girl's best friend.
Yes, that's right. Diamonds.
Diamonds are also a thief's best friend.
And even if it's not girls and not the best friend, I think the whole world is impressed with diamonds and the luxury and the wealth, and it shines and it's symbolic of love and of eternal love.
They're very, very portable. They don't set off metal detectors. So moving them from place to place is easier than moving raw gold or cash. Diamonds are by far the most valuable commodity by weight known to man.
For more than 60 years, Kane has played thieves, criminals, gangsters, and detectives trying to catch them. But that's Hollywood. And what he does in this book? Well, that's real life. From the largest bank robbery in American history to the world's most audacious book heist. Heist with Michael Caine travels to America, Australia, Stockholm, Antwerp, and everywhere in between to tell true stories behind the world's most daring heists. Now, this is an Audible original podcast, so that means that it's free for all members and doesn't even use a monthly credit. All you gotta do is become a member and you can have this book today. Here's what Audible has set up for us. They are offering a free audiobook and 30 days to give you the opportunity to check out their service. To download your free audiobook, go to audibletrial.com/Ron's Amazing Stories. Again, that's audibletrial.com/Ron's Amazing Stories, and you can get Michael Caine and his book, Heist, for free. Thank you, Audible. And now, it's time for your stories.
These are your stories, sent by you, for you.
Our first story was sent in to the comment section of the website with no name or location. I try to track these down, but in the end, it's up to me if I use it or not. As far as I can tell, the email doesn't exist either, or perhaps the person mistyped it. It was JJS Vent. So, JJ, if you want full credit for your story, please write me back and I'll mention your real name on an upcoming show. JJ writes, "Hello, Ron. I teach fifth grade and use your podcast in class from time to time. The kids love the stories and I love your show. Please keep them coming. For this year's talent show, a group of kids are going to make their very own 5-minute mystery. As you say, how about that? I have a creepy story that happened to me when I was in college. I hope you read it on the show. I think it'll send a chill or two. I was a 4-year campus rat at my college. Dorm life was made for me, and I made use of every minute of it. Oh, and yes, I got an education. There was one room that everyone told stories about. People called it Julie's place. Julie was a student that had early onset cerebral palsy. She wanted to live her life as normally as she could for as long as she could. She was able to live on campus for 1 year before she started needing care. She died very young from complications soon after leaving school. People who have had her room swear she's still there having a good time on campus. Most people try to avoid that room, but it was just my luck to get it my sophomore year. To say I have had experiences in that room is quite the understatement. I've always been sensitive, after a sort, and here is one of my stories. Julie must have been a fun girl because things are constantly on the move in this room. For example, one day my toothbrush would be in its case, and the next day my pen would be in that case, and I would take a toothbrush to class. My roommate swore she had nothing to do with it, and we both wrote it off to just another Julie event. One morning I was sleeping in, and I felt someone shaking me awake. I angrily told my roommate to stop. From across the room, I heard some colorful language, followed by the words, "I didn't say anything." But nothing compares to what happened just before Christmas break. My roommate had finished finals early and had already gone home. I had one more final before I could head home the next day. I was studying at the desk when, behind me, all of the books on the nightstand dropped off onto the floor. I turned and saw no reason for this to happen. I went over to investigate, and as I was cleaning up, the papers on my desk flew straight into the air and scattered all about. I turned just in time to see a dark shadow-like thing staring back at me. It was featureless, but I am sure to this day I saw a smile. It faded away, and I was left there, standing, holding some of my books. I didn't move right away, but when I did, I ran out of the room and spent the night in a girlfriend's room. We went back the next morning and papers were all over the room. But my books, well, they were neatly stacked in the shape of a house of cards type thing. I cleaned up, packed up, took my test, and headed home. When I came back to school in January, I was scared and didn't want to go back into that dorm room again. But when I arrived, my roommate was home and she said everything was quiet. We never had a problem for the rest of that year. My junior year? Well, I lived in an off-campus dorm. JJ Vents from Parts Unknown. Well, JJ, that did send a chill or two. Thank you for your story, and if you need scripts for those 5-minute mysteries, let me know. Oh, and when you do, please. please tell me who you really are. Thanks again, and tell the kids hi. This next story is not for the faint of heart. We've had stories like this one before, but somehow this one feels a bit different to me. It was sent in by Alexandria Becker. I was able to talk with Alex on the phone, and I could hear in her voice that this one is still haunting her to this day. I wrote the story that you are about to hear, firsthand from Alex herself. She and I have named it Midnight Callers. The whole thing felt like a dream. One Sunday night, I woke up to our dog, Randy, barking. He was on the bed where my husband and I were sleeping with our 2-year-old daughter. Randy was staring at the bedroom door like an unknown stranger was out there rummaging around. I thought he was just freaking out over a house noise. We had only had him for about 3 months, and he was still a puppy. Anything would set him off. Our roommate, a creak from the house settling, the awnings moving outside in the breeze. Too many things, too many times. So, I wasn't concerned. I decided the best bet would be to open the door and show him that nothing was out there. Sounds a bit silly, but it's what we do with our daughter when she gets scared. And I figured it should work with a puppy, too. I opened the door, and he raced out to the front door and stood there snarling. It was an angry, violent growl, one that I've never heard him make before. I walked over, opened the baby gate, blocking the doorway, planning to open the door and show Randy everything was okay. The second my hand reached for the deadbolt, Randy went wild. He started barking and jumping towards me. Then he suddenly changed his temper and began to whimper. As his mannerism changed, so did mine. I wasn't calm anymore. My heart was racing and sinking at the same time. I was being flooded with a mixture of fear and dread. I decided to look through the peephole. I can't explain why, but I did. Outside were 2 kids. One was just a bit shorter than me and looked younger. I was 21 at the time, and she looked to be about 16 or 17. She was slender and pale. Her hair was white, and she wore it with long, blunt bangs in front that covered most of her eyes. She wore jeans and an olive-thin colored hoodie. She held the hand of a little girl, who looked to be about 3 or 4. She was dressed in the same style jeans, but wore a button-down ivory cardigan. The smaller one was looking at the floor shyly, but had the same shade of hair tied back in a ponytail. Under her free arm, she held a stuffed toy. Had it not been for the feeling of overwhelming dread and fear, I probably would have invited those children in right then and there. But something about them seemed off. I hadn't made any noise, but I hadn't quieted Randy either. Also, I hadn't turned on any lights, so those kids had no real way of knowing that I was even at the door. Nonetheless, the older one spoke. She had a voice that was mature, and she held her head tilted downward so I couldn't see her eyes. She said, "We have to use your phone." I stood there in fear. How did she know I was there? She raised her head to face me directly, and that was when I saw her eyes. There was a reason I couldn't see them through the bangs before. They were black, or midnight blue. Either way, they were otherworldly. She said, "Our mother is worried." As someone who has always been interested in creepy stories, I knew what she was the second that she looked at me through the door. I've never been one to believe in these things. As a skeptic, when it comes to the paranormal, I've written off many a ghost story from friends and family. I just didn't believe it. However, this time I couldn't rationalize my way out of this. I was standing with nothing but a thin wooden door between me and two black-eyed children. I didn't answer her. Slowly and silently, I backed away from the door, Randy still cowering at my ankles. I could hear her calling out, "Please, just let us in for a minute to use your phone." I took another step back, and with that step, the tone changed. At first, she seemed polite, but when I took that second step back, she became commanding, almost hostile. "We're not going to hurt you. If we wanted to do that, we would have broken in. May we please come in and use your phone?" Randy snarled at the door, and I inched backwards, though something inside me kept pulling me back towards the door. It wasn't so much a physical as it was a feeling that I needed to go back and help them. I got to the bedroom, covered up the window, locked the door, and sat in the dim light on the edge of the bed. I heard her call back to me once more, and then it was quiet. I didn't go back to sleep that night, and I haven't slept right since. I know from my readings about BEKs that they just can't come in without permission. I don't know if they've ever hurt anyone, but I still fear that I'll be the exception. When I awoke my husband, he said it was just a dream and told me to forget it. He did go and investigate, but found nothing. To this day, a lingering feeling of sadness, dread, is still with me. And when the house is silent at night, well, I think you can imagine how I feel about that. Alexandra Becker, Lexington, Kentucky. You're still feeling it. After hearing your story, I can still feel it. Alex told me that she's never fully told this story before, and getting it out seems to be helping her get over it. It's been 4 years now, and they still live in that same house. Randy still overreacts to everything, but they've had no more black-eyed kids at their front door. Thank you for sharing your story, Alex. If you want to share your story, then please do. All it takes is going to ronsamazingstories.com. Click on the contact tab or the story submission banner and fill in the blanks. We want to hear your story. We want to feel your story. And please consider doing it today. One of the reasons I picked this group of stories for the show this week was because I actually did receive an update from JJS Fent. It turns out her real name is Jolene Jared from South Advent Grade School in Boston, Massachusetts. She said that her students completed 4 5-minute mysteries in all, and now it's an annual event in her classroom. How about that? Our featured story for this week comes from the Golden Age of Radio. One of the most popular series to come from that time was The Shadow. The show went on the air in August of 1930 and ran until 1954. Over the years, various actors played The Shadow, including Bill Johnstone, Orson Welles, and Brett Morrison, who will play the part for us today. Our episode is titled The House That Death Built, and it first aired on January 25th, 1948.
Who knows what evil lurks in the hearts of men? The Shadow.
Once again, your neighborhood blue coal dealer brings you the thrilling adventures of The Shadow, the hard and relentless fight of one man against the forces of evil. These dramatizations are designed to demonstrate forcefully to old and young alike that crime does not pay. The lucky householders whose homes are heated with hard coal are enjoying steady, uninterrupted, healthful warmth in every room. Even when winter winds blow and the temperature dives to zero, there's no need to cut down heat or close off rooms in homes heated with dependable hard coal. Yes, sir. When you have a supply of hard coal in your basement, you're the boss of heating your house. You are absolutely independent of any outside service. Be glad you heat with anthracite, the home heating fuel that never fails. And remember, blue coal is the finest anthracite money can buy. The Shadow, who aids the forces of law and order, is in reality Lamont Cranston, wealthy young man about town. Years ago in the Orient, Cranston learned a strange and mysterious secret, the hypnotic power to cloud men's minds so they cannot see him. Cranston's friend and companion, the lovely Margot Lane, is the only person who knows to whom the voice of the invisible shadow belongs. Today's drama, The House That Death Built. In a lonely cemetery in New England, three men work furiously in a swirling blizzard, opening a new grave. The headstone lies on one side and reads, Ben Falkenberg, born 1878. Died 1948. The grave is a black pit in the white snow and reveals a cheap, shabby coffin.
Oh, come on, come on. What are you stalling for? Get that coffin clear. Well, well.
All set, Lafferty.
Well, get it open, Rusty.
Yeah.
Give him a hand, Winsor.
Right. It's got to be in there. It's got to. I've got to make sure.
Will you hurry up? You want to freeze out here? Get it open. Get it open.
It's open.
Well, he's in here, all right.
Let me see. Let me see him.
Go ahead and look.
Yeah. Yeah. So old Ben Falkenberg finally died.
Good. Splendid.
All right, let's go.
But you hurry, Lafferty.
Don't be a fool, Winsor. We've got to get to Falkenberg's house before dark. There's $100,000 waiting in there, and nothing can stop us now.
Tell me our ski trip wore you out that much, darling. You haven't said a thing for the last 10 minutes.
I was just wondering, Margot. Would it be smart to stop somewhere along here for a while till this storm lets up?
This is pretty lonely country.
Well, here's a house at the top of this hill. They make out the entrance to the driveway now.
Yes. Look, there's someone standing out there by the entrance.
Oh, hey there. I beg your pardon.
Could you give us a hand, please?
What do you want?
Well, we don't want to get stuck on the road. Do you think the people in the house could put us up for a few hours?
No.
What?
You know what's good for you? Stay away from that house.
But...
keep on driving. Get as far away as you can. Even if it means getting lost on the road. Get out of here. Get out. Don't ever come back.
What devil you say?
That's exactly what I do say. The devil's loose in that heap of rotten wood. Now get out of here.
Okay.
What are we going to do, Lamont?
Drive to the house, Margot. I don't think it could be quite as dangerous as our young friend thinks. It certainly can't be worse than a night in a blizzard.
It isn't a very pleasant-looking place, is it?
No, it isn't.
Looks like a heap of rotten wood. It's all twisty and... well, it looks like an insane architect building.
Well, it'll give us shelter for a while. That's the main thing, Margot. Here's the garage. See, there must be a side entrance somewhere.
Good afternoon. I suppose you know you're trespassing.
Who are you?
My name is Lafferty. I'm the butler.
Well, can
you want shelter in this house? The answer is no. Most decidedly no. Get back in your car and leave.
That's impossible, Mr. Lafferty.
This house has been closed. It will remain closed until it's burned.
Until it's burned?
Yes, madam. I've been instructed by the owner to burn it. Because fire is the only thing that will destroy the death and horror in it. Will you please leave?
You have a telephone?
My dear sir, will you be trivial in the face of death?
Of course you have. I see the wires. Come on, Margot.
Stop.
If I'm going to get out of here, I've got to get a tow car to hold me. I'm going to fall.
Now, don't be a fool. Don't go into that house. If you value your life, don't go in there. Rusty. Rusty.
Coming right up, Lafferty.
What are you doing with that gun, you fool? Put that away.
I'm just covering that Cranston guy in case I was holed up in the garage.
You know him?
Sure, who don't? Lamont Cranston, playboy. Pal of the police commissioner. Dangerous girl, Margot Lane. Hey, look, Lafferty, we've got to get him out of here.
But not with a gun, you idiot.
Well, how?
The way we decided to get rid of intruders before we came here. Frightened.
Like that line you handed Cranston?
Yes.
You almost had me believe it.
Well, they will believe before we're finished. Now go get Windsor from the gate. I'll have a few bitter words to say to him. He was stationed there to keep people out. Now we'll have to work overtime to get rid of Cranston.
Yeah, but how, Lafferty, how?
Leave that to me, Rusty. Leave that to me.
Stairs ought to lead to the main floor, Margot. Watch your step.
Margot, what is going on in this house?
Not very much, from the looks of it.
The butler, Lafferty, and the young man at the gate. What are they trying to warn us about?
I don't know, Margot. Wait a minute. Let's try that door there.
This house is twistier inside than it is outside.
A zigzag labyrinth.
Who are you?
I beg your pardon?
Get your hands up and don't move.
Do you mind putting a light on?
I ask you what you're doing in my house. Speak up.
Your house?
Why, the butler said it was
the butler?
He said his name was Lafferty.
Who else is outside? Quick.
My dear miss...
The name doesn't matter.
I think it does, my
Who's
dear.
Who's that? Oh!
Hey!
Speak up! Who is it?
Don't try to shoot again, my dear. You can't see in the dark. I can. You raise that revolver, I'll blast your hand
off. If you don't mind, I think I'll light a match. I'd like to know who's murdering who. Oh, this is a charming situation. Margaret, there's a candle on the table.
Right.
We're all strangers, aren't we? Mr. Lafferty claims to be butler of this crazy house, but he's unacquainted with this young lady who claims to own it.
Mr. Cranston.
How do you know my name?
Now, look, mister, I warn you...
Go in at the gate. What's your name?
Windsor.
And you, young lady?
Jane Archer.
So, we have a spook house and three lying strangers. I suppose you all cover each other with your guns while I phone for a tow car and the local police. Must be a phony.
Don't look for it,
Don't
Mr.
Move.
Cranston.
Look out!
Very interesting. United front against the police, eh? What are you people up to in this madhouse?
The Green Ghost! Windsor! Lafferty! The Green Ghost! Oh!
That was Rusty.
Rusty? Well, keep in the hall. Put away your guns and come on, all of you. Hold the line a little closer, Margot.
All right.
Good. Oh, this is a mess. This man Rusty you called in?
Yeah.
He shot three times in the chest.
So I see.
But by what? Who shot him?
I don't know. Wait a minute, look at this. There's a trap on the side of the hall. Three guns set there like a firing line. Now there's a treadle attachment to the triggers. As Rusty stepped on it, the trap swung open and the guns in the wall blasted the life out of him.
But what was he screaming? Something about the Green Ghost.
I don't know, Margot. Now listen, all of you, and get this straight. We're all of us trapped in this twisted house, and some of you have declared war.
My dear Mr.
Margot and I are going back to the living room and call the police. I wouldn't try any gunpowder persuasion, Lafferty.
Really, Mr. Cranston?
Really. I took the liberty of borrowing Rusty's gun while I was examining him. You wouldn't like to trade shots with me, would you, Lafferty? I see you wouldn't. All right, Margot, let's go. Hello. Hello. Margot. The line's dead. Blizzard must have knocked the wires down.
Then we're stuck here.
Right. In a house without light, without a phone, and with three maniacs who apparently dislike each other as much as us.
I want to get out of here, Lamont.
I don't know if we can find our way out now, Margot. And even if we could, there's been a murder committed. We've got to find out who's responsible.
What can we do?
Now you can sit tight and wait here for me, darling. The Shadow's going to pay a visit.
Windsor.
Yes?
Step into this alcove a moment.
Well?
Congratulations, my dear boy.
For what?
Oh, don't be modest. You were magnificent. How did you manage to make Rusty scream that gibberish about ghosts before you killed him?
Before
that I... That was a two-edged sword. With one blow, you eliminated that little man and... You created an air of supernatural menace that will certainly frighten the others away.
You're crazy. You killed Rusty.
My dear boy.
You killed Rusty for his share of the money. You want to split two ways instead of three. Maybe you only want to split one way after you killed me.
Windsor, that's ridiculous. I swear that I never killed... Who's that?
Someone who laughs at two modest killers. With poison in their hearts and doubt in their minds.
But there isn't anybody I can see.
This... is the Shadow.
Shadow?
What money brought you to this house, Lafferty? Answer with the truth.
Well, I...
$100,000.
Whose money is it?
It belonged to Jerry Crane.
You lied. Jerry Crane was a thief executed for murder 10 years ago.
Jerry Crane tried to bribe the state's executioner with that money to fix the execution so he'd live.
No man can live through an execution, Windsor.
Well, Jerry thought he could. He bribed the executioner, a man named Ben Falkenberg. Falkenberg was caught and dismissed. He built this house and lived here with the money for 10 years. He died about a month ago.
No one found the money, Shadow. No one. It must be here. It's got to be here. Now, look. Look, Shadow. If you know where it is, we'll split with it. Three ways. Fair and square.
The fair and square way you split with Rusty?
I didn't kill him. I swear it.
You're a liar.
Now, if you'll help us find it, Shadow...
You cannot buy truth, Lafferty. You cannot buy justice. And you cannot buy the Shadow.
Margot?
Oh, Margot. I've been sitting here in this creepy room getting the shape. Well?
Windsor and Lafferty accuse each other of murdering Rusty.
What are they after?
Money. Fortune hidden somewhere in this house by a former executioner named Ben Falkenberg.
What's Jane Archer after? Maybe she killed him.
Maybe. That's going to be the Shadow's next visit. Do you know where she is?
Well, I thought she was...
That's Jane. She's somewhere down that hall. Come on.
What's the matter?
I don't know. She's in trouble. This is another phony foot trap.
She must be further down the hall.
Yes, that same long winding hall where Rusty was killed.
Come on, I wonder...
Look up. Now, look up ahead, Margot. See that tiny window? In the door.
That's Jane Archer behind us. She's caught in there.
Somebody get me out! Get me out!
Lamont, that roof. Looks like a gas chamber. Like an executioner's gas chamber.
Hold your breath, Jane. Get away from the door. I'll have to shoot the lock. Get back from the door and hold your breath. Return to the Shadow in just a moment. Friends, during the recent severe weather, homes, apartment houses, schools have enjoyed healthful, uninterrupted warmth. Regardless of snowstorms, faulting highway traffic, homes and other buildings heated with hard coal have been sure of continued heat. That's because enough coal can be stored to carry you right through the severe part of the heating season. Yes, when you have a supply of hard coal in your basement, you have the assurance of a warm and snug home at all times. Now here is something else. Coal is convenient to burn when modern equipment is used. With a Blue Coal Temp Master on your furnace, all trips to the basement to adjust furnace dampers are eliminated. The Temp Master automatically adjusts them for you, keeping your home constantly at the healthful temperature you set on the upstairs dial. You'll be delighted when you discover how little attention your furnace requires with a Temp Master regulator. A Temp Master can be installed on any furnace without interrupting the heat in your home.
Yes, it will pay you to call the nearest blue coal dealer tomorrow and ask him to demonstrate the Temp Master in your home. Now, back to the shadow. Marooned in the twisted house of Ben Falkenberg, who has died and left a fortune concealed in the rotting rooms, Lamont Cranston and Margot Lane find Jane Archer, one of the four mysterious people who are searching for the money, trapped in the replica of an executioner's gas chamber. Cranston has just fired the sixth shot into the heavy steel lock.
Look out now, Margot. I've got to use my shoulder.
Cranston, what's that? Who's doing the shoot?
Give me a hand, Windsor, quick. Get this door knocked in.
Right. Together now.
Once more, does it? Hold your breath.
What's that?
The gas chamber. Help me get the girl out.
Jane Archer.
She's almost killed. Take her arm.
Come on.
Steady. Get that door closed, Margot.
Right.
Get her down the hall here.
Jane. How do you feel, Miss Archer?
She's all right. A touch of methane. Lucky it wasn't cyanide. That kills like a thunderbolt.
What happened, Miss Archer?
I was looking. Walked into the room. The door started to close. Automatic. Couldn't stop it.
You just got here in time.
Searching for what, Miss Archer?
What?
You said you were looking. Looking for what?
Why?
What were you looking for?
I don't know.
This isn't time for secrets, Miss Archer.
Let her alone.
Well, I thought you two were enemies. You were pointing guns at each other half an hour ago.
I wasn't pointing any gun. Lafferty was doing all that.
Lafferty?
What's the matter?
Where is that? You heard the shots and came running, Winter. Why didn't Lafferty?
Maybe because he set this trap, too.
Where did you leave him, Winter?
Wandering around this rotten honeycomb of a house. What's the matter?
Funny. Sounds almost like drugs. Yes, it does.
Come on.
But who's pounding? Why?
Where's it coming from?
20 miles away, stuck in a snow drift catching pneumonia.
Wait, Margot. Coming from this room.
Lamont!
Oh. Windsor, Miss Archer, in here quickly.
What's the matter? What is it?
I found Lafferty.
What?
Swinging in the air, his heels banging on the wall. He's been hanged. Get another candle lit, Margot.
All right, Lamont.
Dead, huh?
Another murder.
Very much dead. Lafferty wandered into this room, stepped on that trap, and a spring noose caught him at the neck and whipped him into the air.
Oh.
What's the matter, Miss Archer?
What?
Don't like murder,
huh? Lamont.
Who are you, Miss Archer? Why are you in this house?
I can't tell
you. Can't you understand, Miss Archer, that Lafferty was right? This house is filled with death and terror. This is the time for the truth.
All right.
Who are you?
Jane Crane.
Crane?
Jerry Crane's daughter?
Yes. Jerry Crane? The man who bribed Ben Falkenberg? The man who was executed? Yes. I'm his daughter. I came here to see if I could find that money. The money he stole from the Chase Bond Company the night he murdered the guard. I had a crazy idea it might help clear the name.
What's the matter with you, Windsor?
You're right, Cranston. It is time for the truth. You'll get a kick out of this confession. I work for the Chase Bond Company. Detective assigned to recover that money.
What?
Yeah, I was playing along with Lafferty and his stooge to find the money. Of course, I figured this house would be harmless after Ben Falkenberg died.
He's not dead.
What?
Ben isn't dead. He's somewhere in this house. He was the green ghost Rusty saw before he was killed.
Now, wait a second. Lafferty and I saw the body.
You didn't see Ben's body. He's still alive.
Wait a minute. He's still alive and in this house, setting death traps. None of us is going to be safe until he's caught.
Yeah, that's right. Well, I think I better start looking for him.
Wait a second, Winston.
Now, look, Cranston, it's my job.
Your job was the money. I'll forget that. The big thing now is to find the killer. That's my job. You better stay with Jane, Margot.
Lamont?
All right, darling. That's the way you want it.
Now, look, Cranston, you might run into another one of those death traps 2 feet from here.
I'm afraid we'll just have to take our chance.
Okay.
Good luck.
Thanks, we may need it. Come on,
soon, Amato. This is our last candle. Is it burning? I need plenty of light.
You know where we're going?
Well, every time someone went down this hall, they were stopped by an executioner's trap.
Rusty walked down a little way, and he was killed by a firing line of guns.
Yes.
Gene Archer went further and was trapped in a gas chamber.
That's right.
Lafferty went even further and was hung in a noose.
Money's at the end of this hall?
Must be. I'm going to follow every twist and turn until we reach the end.
How many more traps will there be?
Wish I knew, darling.
It's like running the gauntlet.
Around this corner. And shield the flame.
Stay close to me, darling.
That looks like a flight of steps ahead. Better let me go first.
Hi.
Careful. Lafferty was trying to frighten us off with his spook talk. He told the truth. The house has murder and terror in every corner. There's death.
That's all right.
That was close.
Oh, what was?
3-foot guillotine knife, sharp as a razor. Oh. We'd have been sliced like butter.
Lamar, we're not going to keep on.
Got to.
Mark, what'll be next? What'll be next?
I don't know, darling.
Mark?
Yes?
There isn't much candle left. My finger's getting burned.
Try to hold out a little longer, Margo. The head of the stairs.
What if one of the traps is solitary confinement for life? What? Oh!
What happened to the candle?
Just blew out. There was a draft, a sudden gust.
Get back against the wall.
What's the matter now?
Sudden gust could mean a door open somewhere. Maybe another trap starting. I'll have a look.
As much as I can look in this dark.
No, Lamont, I don't want to be left behind. Please. Lamont. Lamont, I'm getting all mixed up in the dark. There's so many doors and corners and turns. Lamont. Lamont.
Good evening, my dear. I've been waiting for you. Come in. Come in.
No, I...
Come in, please. Come in, my dear.
Lamont!
Don't scream, please. It's all right. Ben's your friend. Your dear friend. Now, isn't this nice? Isn't this lovely?
It's Death Hawk. That's the electric chair.
That's right, my dear. That's right. Now come with Ben.
Ben? You're Ben Falkenberg?
I let them think old Ben was dead, so they'd be company. Friends looking for the money. I've had three today. They died well, very well indeed. But not as well as you will, my dear. Now come along.
No,
now,
no.
Trust me, my dear. Many's the one that I've coaxed to my little chair.
No, please, no!
Sit down, child. I'm doing your kindness. A great kindness. All right. Now you're entirely ready.
No, please, no! In heaven's name, no!
Don't touch that switch, Falkenberg.
Oh. Who's that? Who spoke?
This is the shadow.
The shadow? There's no shadow in this room. It's all bright light and beautiful current. Stop laughing.
What a fool you are. You love death so dearly that you want to die?
No, I don't want to die. I wouldn't be able to continue with my execution.
But you will die for the murder of three people in this house.
Oh, no, not me. There'll be no one to tell. No one will know. After this pretty girl not dies, no one will live to tell.
The shadow knows, Ben. The shadow knows the truth.
Where are you? Come out and fight.
You'll be brought to justice, Ben.
I will not.
You'll pay for your crimes, Ben. There is no escape.
I could find you. I'd be safe. I would.
There is no escape, Ben. You'll burn for murder. You'll burn.
Burn. Yes. Yes, burn. I have my own switchboard.
Don't touch those wires.
This current has saved me all my life. It'll save me in death.
Stop.
How are you two back there, Cold?
Oh, we're fine, Cranston. Don't worry about Jane.
You seem to be doing all of that, Windsor.
Too bad he hasn't got three arms. Looks like he's having trouble holding out a jail and the money at the same time.
I've got the money.
Uh-huh.
I can't get over old Falkenberg hiding up in that execution chamber for $100,000 all these years.
Faking his death so that people would be lured into his death house.
Well, the scandal of the bribe and his dismissal must have really snapped his mind.
I think the most ironic part was the way he died by electrocution himself.
Oh, he wasn't electrocuted, Margo.
Wasn't electrocuted?
No.
He was. I saw him die.
Not from electrocution.
He was electrocuted. He staggered against the control panel, grabbed the live wires, and was killed instantly.
Not by electricity. By shock.
What do you mean?
You remember the blizzard?
Mm-hmm.
The phone and power lines were down. There wasn't any current in the house. Those wires were dead.
But Lamont...
He died from the shock of his own imagination, Margot. Ben Falkenberg was killed by his belief in his own death. Copyrighted by Street and Smith Publications, Incorporated. The characters, names, places, and plot are fictitious. Any similarity to persons living or dead is purely coincidental. Again next week, The Shadow will demonstrate that
the weed of crime bears bitter fruit. Crime does not pay. The Shadow knows.
As episodes go, that was a pretty good one. A straightforward ghost impersonation mystery with a couple of murders thrown in for good measure. How does the Shadow do it? He's always in the wrong place at the right time and always knows how to solve the crime. Amazing. The Shadow this time was portrayed by Brett Morrison. He was a member of the cast from 1943 to 1954. Morrison was an actor and he was also a popular cabaret singer. He was born in Chicago, Illinois, and entered radio during the 1930s while still in high school. Morrison portrayed the Shadow longer than any other actor, spending 10 years in the role in two separate runs. He also hosted the long-running series, Bestseller. That was episode number 454, and Jolene Jarrod, along with Alexander Becker, provided the stories. Thank you, guys. It is stories like those that make podcast goes. If you want to follow the podcast or the blog, head to ronsamazingstories.com. There you will find any of the links I mentioned and how to contact us. Do you want to help the show? The best thing you can do is to tell your friends all about it, and please leave reviews or feedback wherever you listen. Clicking that follow or like button makes us grow. Thank you for listening, and I hope you come again to find out what are Ron's Amazing Stories.
All of the vintage audio used in the podcast is believed to be in the public domain. Ron's Amazing Stories does not own the rights to any of the old-time radio used here. If you hold the rights to any of the shows played, please contact us immediately at ronsamazingstories.com.